This week on RSBNB Update, we detail our favorite minigames for the minigame celebration. The ninjas also strike the player own farm, the combat council admits power creep, and the lore heavy hitters cover Mark's reaction to killing Guthix and Raven's Zodiac-inspired ciphers. This is RSBNB Update, episode 813, recorded Thursday, January 21st, 2021. The Lore Looking Glass. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of RSBNB Update. This one crept up on me. I can't believe it's Thursday already, Tanis.
Yeah, time has been flying lately.
It really has. Yeah. It really has. It's minigame week, celebration of minigame week. Joining us this week is Questcaping from Clan Quest, who you last heard on the Raksha episode. Welcome back.
Hello, hello. You can't get rid of me.
And I don't want to get rid of you this week because we got a lore Q&A, and I thought, you know, who better to discuss a lore Q&A with than somebody like you?
I do indeed like my lores, and it was a really interesting stream this week, so I'm looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, we're going to make that the big hill of this episode. We also do have some smaller things like the combat Q&A, a farming player-owned farm ninja strike, which came out of left field, but... Nonetheless, if you guys are joining us for the first time, you can follow along in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. And if you want to support us, you can also find us on Patreon at patreon.com/rsbnb. I am Shane12088. He is Tanis79, and you are Questcaping, one of our very favorite Clan Quest members. Lots of Clan Quest influence on this show.
Hey, can't get rid of any of us.
Yeah, I might have something to do with that, but of course.
It's an inside job.
It really is. It really is.
Nepotism.
It's rigged.
Yeah, that's what we do. We're the riggers. But, hey, you know how we had the Lord Diggers title with Diana and Sirion? We could be the riggers.
The clan riggers.
The clan riggers. Perfect. Anyway, celebration of minigames. Until next Monday, double currency rewards from almost every mini game. Soul Wars, Pest Control, Shattered Worlds, Barbarian Assault, Castle Wars, Conquest, Dominion Tower, Fight Cauldron, Fight Pits, Fist of Guthix, Pest Control, Soul Wars, Shattered Worlds, Brimhaven Agility Arena, Flash Powder Factory, Gnome Restaurant, Great Orb Project, Mage Training Arena, Shifting Tombs, Trouble Brewing, Vine Sweeper, Cabbage Face Punch Bonanza, Stealing Creation, Heist, Taibo Wani Cleanup, Ports, and of all else, just general failure.
You know, I'm a minigame person, but there were a few of those on my list that went, wow, I haven't done that in years.
Yeah.
I was just thinking how you could take a paintbrush and just wipe out about half of the things you just named off.
No
one would miss them. No one would miss it.
I would miss it. I would miss it.
Well, we'll keep the ones, you know, like, we'll keep Shattered Worlds. That's going to be a good one. Pest Control is a good one. Soul Wars, Stealing Creation, like all of
with the clan shout out.
Yeah. Dom Tower. I mean, like I said, about half of them are decent. The other half, I could count the number of participants on one hand.
I was in favor of getting rid of mobilizing armies. I don't think really anyone had too much affection for that one, but. Pretty much whenever on, say, Reddit or whatever, I see someone say, get rid of X, Y, Z. Like, most recently I saw get rid of Conquest or get rid of Trouble Brewing, and I'm like, no, for both of the above.
You know, Conquest was fun. I mean, it's a nice idea, but no one plays it, so it's just one of those things that you go, would anyone miss it? Well, I guess Questcaping would miss it.
It was Wizard's Chess with the Void Knight.
Not quite made for RuneScape mechanics, but it's quite nice. And there is a committed community, like, still lurking around arranging games whenever they can. It's like, I'm in on all these little mini-game communities that are pretty isolated and not really anyone knows about them outside the die-hard mini-game fans. But there are still people there, even if they number into the dozens rather than the hundreds or whatever, who do PVM or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, fight caves and fight pits, you know, everybody needs to do the fight cave for the fire cape, because you do need one of those to upgrade it eventually. And, you know, it was a rite of passage a number of years ago. Fight pits was one of the first PvP-style minigames that wasn't Castle Wars, so, you know, keep that in mind. Pest control, you know, you can go back to that, and you see people in the early years continually training there. It became an alternate training method aside from Slayer, if you didn't want to do Slayer. The Brimhaven Agility Arena, that one, of course, I think is in desperate need of a rework and would be a prime candidate to pivot onto 120-plus agility. With that, we talked about that in our Agility Monthly bit.
Maximum level there being 40, that could definitely do an expansion up ways.
Yeah. And I think there might have been a design document somewhere for that, but it never really took off. Flash Powder Factory, of course, has a bit of a tie-in with safe cracking, though just tangentially. Gnome Restaurant?
Gnome Restaurant. I love me some Gnome Restaurant.
Yeah. It's really tedious. I've only done it once or twice, and I mean, I guess we're gonna need to go back there at some point if I ever go for the Master Questscape.
I have more patience for mini gaming than you do.
Yeah, I definitely do. Compared to you on that respect, because I mean, most of these I think had their day in the sun, and what we really need to make all of these mini games work, and this is something we've talked about many times in the past, it's just, you know, an instancing system where if you want to go play Fist of Guthix, you just click a button and you get, you know, queued up to a shard instance world where anybody who wants to play Fist of Guthix across all the RuneScape worlds are instanced together there, and it just kicks off automatically.
Like a couple of the newer ones have that. There's Cabbage Face Bunch Bonanza, which can pretty much always find people in Spotlight or not. Same deal with another one has it. I think it was on my mind, but it slipped. But yeah,
I couldn't tell you.
A few of the newer ones.
And, you know, a lot of these are also really good for clan events, you know, Soul Wars, Steel and Creation, Trouble Brewing. Trouble Brewing. Yeah, we're very fond of Trouble Brewing. I remember those events going way back.
A classic bit of RuneScape, isn't it? All the nonsense you got to do.
Yeah. Shifting Tombs came with Menaphos, of course. I would love, you know, to find some time this weekend to sit down and do Shattered Worlds, but I'm going to be, you know, knocking out the last few Yak Track tasks.
Oh, imagine doing Yak Track.
Yeah, and I don't have a minigame one where I can do anymore, so that's kind of SOL on that. But
I think I did about 3 Yak Track tasks this time before giving up. If there's no lore, I'm not interested, really.
Yeah, all right, that's fair. Of the minigames, which one of these is your favorite?
Just like all minigames in general?
Yeah, of all minigames on this list, if you just had to pick one, what would it be?
Ooh, I do love my Trouble Brewing, personally. It's just all the most beautiful chaos in one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And of the combat minigames, I have a real fondness for Deathmatch, honestly. It's a newer minigame designed for EOC combat, which is a bit of a redundant statement.
They removed that
evolution
one.
Evolution of combat. But yes, it's got all sorts of wacky things going on. Summon an army of evil chickens. Like even the clannies who aren't generally fond of PvP minigames tend to come along and have a wild time in there, just summoning
evil
chickens.
Where did they move that to? Because
it is in Edgeville.
All right.
Just under a little hatch.
That's interesting. That's not on this list.
Ooh. Ah, right.
Because it gives deathmatch points, not Thaler. Right. Okay.
Right. Well, the thing is, I think with the minigame week this week, I've seen a few things about there having been really poor communication about exactly what is involved.
Yeah.
So from what I've seen, it's not actually all minigames like they advertised.
Right.
Hit and miss. And some things have 1.3 times boosts or whatever instead of double, which is really quite confusing. So not quite sure what's going on there. Haven't really dived into it head first myself, waiting for the weekend. But, well,
if I had to pick one, it would be the old trusty Castle Wars.
Yes.
Tanis, how about you? If you had to pick one minigame off this list.
I can't pick one. but I would say Soul Wars, that's, I like Soul Wars, and that's also how I got my Slayer VIP tickets. It's gaining Thaler in there. But Pest Control and Shattered Worlds are also up there.
Nice to hear, right, like, that. Shattered Worlds landed well with you, hey?
Yeah, I mean, well, it's been, it took a few patches. Improved. Yeah, it's been improved, yeah.
It has, yeah. And, oh, Soul Wars. Have you heard about the Soul Wars launch over on Old School?
No, I had not. Did it go well?
It went badly. It went really badly. Yeah. Like, everyone... Well, I had a few friends really excited to just play Old School forever after it came out, but then it came out really heavily rigged by various clans on there, which I guess is one of the downfalls of having a higher player base, more players to just go in and rig things. And they cleaned some of that up, but the interest has basically dropped by now, and they dropped the ball on it.
Well, that's unfortunate, but it'll be a good learning experience going forward on that. Also this week, you can get a free clue scroll every day. Just talk to the clown, Jilly Willikers, in the Lumbridge Crater. The quality you get will be dependent on your total skill level.
I wish you could sell those. I'd be like, hey, Shane, you want a clue scroll? You'd buy them off me.
No, they...
No clue scroll dealer.
At this point, clue scrolls are popping out of your ears. There's so many. I feel. But...
Well, I'm sure I'd find somebody to take me up on my offer.
I'm sure you would. I'm sure you would.
Oh, I like my ever-expanding clue carrier.
Yeah, that was a good item. Okay.
Yes.
Now, out of left field this week, a ninja strike on the player-owned farm of all things.
See what he did? See what he did? You see what he did there?
That wasn't actually planned, but I'll take credit for it now that you mention it. Yeah, we plan everything like that on the show.
We got left field too. We got right fields here. We got all the fields.
I just found this really weird. And, you know, this is something I still interact with daily for my bean farming.
You're full of beans, this Shane.
And, you know, I'm just going to go through this list here. You can now mark favorite animals with a new right-click or long press option through the animal or pen or barn interface. And these animals can't be traded between players, given to requesters, or handed over when attempting to sell all to a buyer. They've also,
well, that's good for, like, the breeders, right? Like,
yeah.
So you don't accidentally sell your breeder.
Have your favorite breeding pair and whatnot, I guess. Yeah. Sure.
Straight favorites, your animals.
And, you know, I've always found it easy to keep them apart, but maybe that's just me. They've also added new buttons to the animal information interface to make it easier to feed the animals honeycomb. And to do this, you long press or right-click the button to feed the maximum number of honeycombs if you want to do that. And, you know, remember, just a reminder for everybody out there, honeycombs are the food that affects the animal's traits, and, of course, the only two traits that really matter when it comes down to the breeding are the health and happiness. So those are really the only two honeycombs you want to go in for. They had plans to do things with the other traits like speed and beauty and whatnot, but they never wound up doing that.
The animal races.
Yeah, that too. That would have been interesting, I think. You know, that's a classic Mod Raven thing. The farm was his beast. Animal buyers.
Then they just make us feed him something else then.
Yeah. He had a fun discussion.
Something else to worry about
that this week. Animal buyers can be once again set to appear through word of mouth based on what animals are in the pens, which is good. I thought there was an option to turn that back, but you definitely want that. Adding food to the troughs through the Make X window will now pick an appropriate food based on the type already in the trough or the type that was last used. And if neither of these are possible, it will default to the first appropriate food item in your backpack. And the Make X trough menu will now start at the maximum value. I found this one a bit counterintuitive, honestly, because if I have a stack of 1,000 mushrooms in my pack, I don't necessarily want to accidentally put 1,000 mushrooms in one. I'd rather start from the bottom.
Not everyone carries 1,000 mushrooms around, though, Shane.
Well, I mean, it could be mushrooms. It could be flowers. It could be meat. It could be fish. You know what I mean.
Generally, though, on the rare occasions when I do play our own farm, I basically only take out the amount of food I wish to use. So.
Okay. Okay.
See, I just keep doing it until I get tired of doing it and I figure it's going to last for a while.
Right. So nice. So my flow in the past would have been, you know, grab 1,800 fish or something, put 600 in one pen, 600 in another, and away you go. Whereas you guys would just do it pen by pen, I'm gathering.
And it sounds like relative here, I don't really remember, but it sounds like it started at one, and no one's ever going to want to just put one food in.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense as well. And it's all a question of what the sane default is. The warning which first appears when attempting to harvest an animal under 100% health can now be toggled back on. And for those of us who are just interested in beans, we ignore that warning all the time because health doesn't influence beans, which, Tannis, you're going to hate me for this. They should have made health influence beans.
It doesn't matter now anyway.
Tannis, profit-moted farmer.
Yeah, the beans are not what they used to be. These are more like I don't know. We got like an off brand of beans now. We used to have the Bush's baked beans, the secret family recipe, but now we got some like Walmart beans in a can. It's not the same.
Imported from China.
Yeah.
For 10 minutes, enjoy.
I don't know. I can still do good stuff with the beans, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's the shrooms and stuff. The tuna grapes, shrooms, I guess. Oh, well, yeah, that one too. I mean, there is, but it's different.
And farming bonus XP weekend. I have been itching to try and get somebody to try this on a double XP live. As in, you stock up on your seeds, you stock up on your beans, and get a massive, massive spike in farming XP on double XP live.
Yes.
Because that's another use case for it as well, with elders or magics. Magics probably, since elders cost an arm and a leg.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, but magics aren't worth it. Like, it's not enough.
13K XP each times by 2, 26K.
Yeah, but you sacrificed XP along the way. So you want that big bang on the double XP because you're sacrificing it for the beans.
Yeah. Yeah.
The beans.
I think, honestly, the mushrooms might be the best option for that.
Yeah, it is now.
Yeah, if I remember what I did. I haven't gone through the numbers in a while, and every time I start talking about this, I start thinking, Premier's a good value this year. Maybe it's time to do the Iron Man farming method.
Yeah.
It is a good value.
All right.
You know, having just moved from the UK to Canada a year ago, it's interesting how people talk about it being a different price in each country, but the UK and Canada pretty much have equivalent value, which is rather nice, I'm finding.
Yeah, I've found that. I found that as well. I think it was like 624 Canadian this year. I'm not sure what the UK was if you did the currency exchange on that.
Probably about equivalent.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But really good Premier value again.
Yeah.
Player-owned farm paddock requirements are now listed in the construction skill guide. And for consistency's sake, various messaging on the Manor Farm and Ranch at a time has been turned into info boxes, including activating and deactivating the overhead of the head icons, changing and checking in with the seasonalizer, placing, removing, or checking farming totems, trying to use the ranch without completing the Anachronia base camp tutorial, and not having enough materials to build dinosaur pens. Quick selling animals to buyers will now trigger an info box stating the total number of beans gained. I think this one this week is my favorite. This one's my favorite because you never knew how many beans you were getting unless you, mm-hmm. you know, did it one at a time. So this is one of my favorites this week. Small, but a favorite. And, you know, this is a good one as well. Dinosaur eggs dropped by feral, ripper, brutish, venomous dinosaurs will now trigger loot beams.
Oh, I'm surprised they didn't.
Yeah,
that's kind of rough. I'm glad I never tried to get any of those because could have missed it.
Remember our little egg hunt, Shane?
Yeah.
Back before release of the ranch, we had a little competition trying to get people dropping as many eggs as possible for a reward. But the drop rate was really low back pre-release, so barely anyone get any.
Yeah. Well, was that you or me that decided that would be a good competition?
I think that was you. And I just went along with it.
I think we had a, you know, only, you could count the number of people competing on that in one hand. And I think the number of eggs we got was, you know, in the single digits.
I think people were excited about it and then they got in on it and then went, oh, the drop rate is nothing. Cool. Right. Goodbye.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Force them to go to Big Game Hunter, at least as it was back then. Tool tips for animal health and happiness meters now appear when they are tapped on mobile devices. Okay, good. Good. And that's the Player Owned Farm Ninja Strike. Pretty. See, I want to say small, but I feel like it was not necessarily needed.
Well, see, I got the same thing with this one. It's kind of like with the mini game. Would you notice it if it hadn't happened? I don't really know. That being said, like, there are a couple good ones, like the food stuff. I think that's good because when I go around, I usually have a stack of whatever the mushrooms are eating, whether that's mushrooms or.
And I think that's a hallmark of a fundamentally good Ninja Strike is that if you're on the fence of whether or not it was needed, it just buffs those things that could be little pain spots here and there.
Those things like, if they're doing the job right, you won't notice it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Just a couple things before we move on to the rest of the patch notes this week. Bank presets, as a reminder, on Monday the 25th are going free. Free-to-play players will get 7 bank presets and members will get 10 in total.
Oh,
beautiful.
Oh, bring me them presets. Dude, and my friends, I was like, dude, you're getting 10. They're like, that's not enough. Like, are you serious? You seriously?
Honestly, I don't do much that is combat related, and I could probably fill 7 to 8 up on day one if I wanted to.
Oh, okay. Well,
I have about 2 presets that I use on a general basis. That's about it. But with this, I might actually use more than 2. Imagine that.
There you go. And as well, next week, the feline surprise, they say, will be making its way to the Oddman store in the form of all 3 outfits from the Catwalk Treasure Hunter promo.
Ooh, right.
And this is the Santa Paws outfit set, comes as 1 piece. However, the Samurai and Meowsketeer are sold in 7 individual pieces. And for each item you already own, you'll get a 15% discount on the remaining parts, up to a 90% discount if you were to own 6 out of the 7 pieces.
Oh, nice.
Huh. Well, that's cool.
I thought that was a pretty good idea for a Treasure Hunter cosmetic thing.
Yes. Yeah. Release it on Treasure Hunter, and then a while later, put it to the Oddman store.
Yes. Very happy about the Oddman.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember when this came out, this was one of the few times that we actually said, hey, you know, if this is the kind of
money.
If this is the kind of Treasure Hunter promo you want to see, spend your money. And I think that's about the only time we have encouraged people to go out and buy keys was for this. And, you know, if you didn't get the rest of them, complete your set. And I think this is a fundamentally good model, so I might actually just dump some oddments on this to kind of, you know, influence the analytics in my own unique way.
There you go.
So
watch out, Shane's going to have an oddment mercher.
I don't know. I don't think he could do that. But we'll let that be. Now, as for the rest of the patch notes. Text changes. Motherlode mod dialogue now explicitly states that skills have to be leveled up to 95 in order to claim the reward. That's a pretty big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Fixed a typo on boots with Shadow Spike. And fixed punctuation on the quest complete screen on French Worlds, of all things. Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know what you said, and I should.
It's congratulations.
Oh, okay. All right. For archaeology, you can now disable the archaeology skill on both cinder cores and pulse cores. You could not do that before. That's important, I think, for anybody who wants to stay pure and whatnot. You can no longer attempt to change the cosmetic prismatic pendant to the archaeology style. Doing so will now send a message explaining that no such pendant exists. I don't even know what this cosmetic prismatic pendant is. Let's see about that. It is a item that was released in 2014. It was a pendant of skill, and
so this is just a super niche update for the people who still have these unused since 2014, hey?
Yeah. Oh, they were, okay, they were XP boosters back in the day. And then they turned into cosmetic necklaces after the fact, right?
Okay.
Okay, I remember those now. The text box that appears to inform you of the inspect function on artifacts will no longer remain indefinitely.
That sounds like an annoying one.
Yeah. Other changes for mobile, adjusted the default camera sensitivity for new users on mobile. You know, you don't want to give the screen a flick and have it do a 360. That would be bad.
Yeah.
All three extant Felix outfits are now available on the Oddments Power. Whatever the hell that means. We're just going to call it an Oddments store.
Nice attempt at a pun there, but don't think it quite paid off.
No, I don't. I guess they were trying to say par, like store, I guess. Anyways, Raksha.
That doesn't work.
Right. Okay, that would make more sense thinking about it. Raksha has been added to the list of bank presets, and you can now bless extra fine sand at the Lumbridge Altar. For those making that potion prayer renewable flask thing. Right? Yeah.
Anyone on that grind?
Yeah, I think we all have feelings about that we don't want to talk about right now. But continuing on, the Always Adds relic and the Infernal Adds will no longer burn logs in the Temple Trekking minigame, because that, that would be horrible if that happened, because you actually do need those logs to progress. Logging into free-to-play worlds no longer swaps action bars designated to members with primary action bars. That must have been disorienting. Steam players will now see promo-specific banners, and then in a couple of hot fixes, Erithor's Grimoire will now correctly deactivate upon death. And this was hot fixed some point last week, probably by the time we went to air. Iron Men no longer benefit from the 20th anniversary increased Slayer XP buff or Elder Overload golems. And we had a big discussion on that last week. And it seems that they went the right direction.
Well, that mode integrity, eh?
Yeah. And I mean, from what I understand, it comes down to the fact that there's no Bible inside Jagex that says this is what Iron Man is, this is what they definitively have access to and definitively don't have access to. And we talked about how that's something that they definitely needed to do.
Yeah.
There's the power creep going on there.
Well, I mean, that needs to happen, but also, I mean, I think Iron Man is one of those pieces of content where you can sit down and really think about what is of that content. You know what I mean? Like, it was created in a certain kind of like idea, and that just was blatantly not in that vision.
No. And that's it for the patch notes this week. We're of course going to talk about the live streams now. We had two of them this week, two very big ones this week, combat and, of course, lore. We're going to start with combat because I think this is going to be the easier one to get through on this. And this was with mods Raymond, Pi, Orion, and Orion with mod Huli hosting. And, you know, I feel like a good chunk of what we had here was, you know, just gone through, and they had a bunch of people asking, you know, can we get our, you know, favorite thing buffed in the combat experience, which is fine to ask. But we have a look at some of the more substantive questions, starting with the degrade to dust system. Apparently nobody on the Combat Council is a fan of it, and they are looking at it and seeing what they can do with that and seeing, you know, what kind of changes would make sense to replace it with.
Yeah, it feels like ever since they introduced that, they've tried to come up with different ways to get around it, like things like augmenting with the invention skill and whatnot.
Yeah.
I was actually talking with my husband lately, who's a much bigger MMO person than I am. I just do RuneScape, basically. And he was talking about different degrade mechanics in different games. And apparently, degrade to dust is pretty RuneScape exclusive, and a lot of games do not get as brutal with their gear as that.
Yeah, and you know, I'm wondering where it came from, because, you know, when we started off, we had the Barrow's repair system.
Well, it came from Goldsink. And PVM needed someone to buy their stuff. So they wanted valuable drops, remember?
But even they're complaining about it now.
Everyone would
guess. I guess they released the beast. I don't know, man.
The Kraken?
But for real. Yeah, I mean, I think the gold sink would be just fine using the repair stand as it is. You know, I'm a fan of straight gold. I don't want to have to.
I think the repair patch system they brought out last year was interesting.
Repair patches are, yeah, I mean, that's cool. Stuff like that, I'm fine with. But I, you know, I'm not a believer in the inflation's going to kill the game. Watch out.
I actually think it's in a pretty good state right now, honestly, compared to what it could be and has been in the past.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So, next up, looking back at Raksha, in general, the team is happy with where the boss is after the changes and how players are engaging with it, and the players brought in a lot of meaningful feedback to the combat experience. Questcaping, did you ever get your kill on that?
Oh, I did not. I'd been meaning to go on the combat week, but I didn't end up getting around to it, but I feel like I didn't quite really make those changes. I feel like with the laceration boots being a good one for the shadow anima going around and clearing all that.
Yeah.
No, it's still something I got to work on personally, but I'm too busy with the various other things I do in the game, like mini games.
Yeah. All right. And speaking directly from that, the topic of discussion turned to Greater Ricochet and Greater Chain. They are totally aware that the balancing is off with these two codices, and they're actively looking at it, and that's all that can be said at this point, and they'll tweak it when necessary.
What's meant by that? Is like the balancing is off with the codices. Is that the drop rate? Ricochet
is absolutely something that you must have if you're using ranged. But Chain is just something that is, you know, 150, probably less now. I don't know what the price is today, but, you know, relatively highly priced Slayer ability, whereas this other one is, you know, a best-in-slot meta ability that you need if you're doing ranged PVM, or you're going to want it.
Yeah, because it talked on the Ratchet stream about how just completely off the charts that is and how it really probably shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, David absolutely loves it, but even he's aware there's an issue with that. So
love it and let it go.
Yeah, I mean, you don't know how these things are going to, you know, sometimes float, so to speak, until you actually get them in game. So, you know, it's fair to, you know, monitor on that front. Now, how do you feel about the state of the combat triangle? They are two-thirds happy. Happy with the melee side, happy with the range side. They've gone from carbon copies of each other. They have a lot of their problems solved and feel unique to one another. Mage is generally seen by the Combat Council as the weakest style, as it doesn't have a core element to what players want. And despite what PVMers say, 4-tick auto-attacking is not going to be Mage's niche.
I'm glad they said that.
Yeah, that's actually very important, I think, because that's such an obscure method, right?
Mm-hmm. Don't want that to be the defining element on the style.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like, you know, going into one of those old villages where you got to go talk to the village sage or whatever to, you know, try and figure out how to activate the water well at the end of the village. And, you know, you got to go through this whole ritual. You got to stand on one foot, recite this rhyme, and then, you also got to bring this strange pendant to it.
Twice rub your belly while patting your head.
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly what I see Fortick auto-attacking as.
That's about right.
Yeah. So, now, looking at 2021 for combat, they say players have so much power, but they're not able to utilize that power yet. And, of course, we're talking about, you know, tier 92 weapons, multiple essence of finalities and whatnot going forward. And the goal for this year is to create content. And I don't know if they should have said this, because this has different meanings for everybody, but they want to create PVM content that can indefinitely scale upwards.
That sounds like something like Telos 4,000%, but not capped at 4,000%.
And also at the same time, something that is easier to get into than that. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, maybe that's what we'll see with the Elder God Wars. I know that has been kind of alluded to in the past, that, you know, hey, this is not going to be your traditional PVM style, but it's going to be combat related, and they want to, you know, tap into this vein here. They also feel that power creep is beyond levels of what Mod Orion in particular is comfortable with.
It's like what they've been doing lately with the weapons and stuff. They've just been trying to go back and fill niches, because tier 92 is pretty clogged up at this point. But with everything else they've been adding, like the essence of finalities and whatnot, it's just absolutely going above and beyond the regular sort of combat we'd expect.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're going to have to nerf some stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, they said that they are going to look at that and see how they can do that. And, you know, but also when they take away, they also have to give in a different way. It's a give and take method.
I mean, that's been my belief, but doesn't always happen that way, you know?
Nope. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. The next one is one that you're going to be interested in, Tanis. They also said they want to bring a lot more accessibility to combat.
Sweet. That is awesome. Yeah, that's
including
really cool.
Getting more people involved in this. And they saw how many people are willing to take that first step of getting involved with no death costs involved with the combat.
I bet.
I saw people talking about this. Like, people were saying on Reddit and whatnot, the death costs are nothing for a beginner. Don't worry about it. But really, I think it's something of a psychological thing. Because if you know going in that you can just lose things.
Because you're also
out.
Because you're also paying for your food, you're paying for your potions, you're paying for your equipment degrade as well.
Oh yeah, but just give them a free Elder Overload and free deaths, and everyone's gung ho.
And you know, they said they also got some really good analytics from that as well. And you know, it was alluded to that it was based on this accessibility angle, but also about death costs, which there was a question about that we'll touch on after.
I really saw a bunch of friends trying that out who'd never done any of the sort of even mid to high tier bossing before, and really pleased to see that.
Yeah, that's good. What are you most enjoying about what you're doing with combat? This was the question poised to the entire combat council, and the unanimous answer was the narrative push, specifically in terms of Raksha and Elite Dungeons.
What is this, lore in my combat council stream?
Yeah, they were very open to it.
Well, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Give us more narrative content. Just unite the different fields of the game, hey?
Yeah. And now comes, you know, the elephant in the room. What are the biggest challenges to combat currently? Ooh. tick rate, matching player power. Because if they adjust the tick rate, then they also, of course, have to fundamentally change all the ways all the different bosses work. You get a more responsive game, but it also means the boss will attack you 2 to 3 times as fast if you make the tick rate that fast. So they would have to make those kind of adjustments as well. And
reaction times and not happy about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, we love to talk about the tick rate, how when you're, you know, doing combat and you eat and you drink and, you know, you run around trying to evade and whatnot, there's a delay. And David has basically said in the past that you just got to start thinking in ticks and, you know, getting accustomed to yourself to the point where you can count out those 0.6 seconds and know when you have to move.
Basically a turn-based game.
Exactly.
Really short.
Exactly. That's what it is. So, and the second one was matching player power in terms of, you know, what do you do with all the excess power creep out there and give the players something to do. And that led into them talking that, you know, what they really need is just more time to fix balance and, you know, effectively take away from players while ensuring that they give them something new that is more balanced in its place. And the discussion on this came up is that, you know, at RuneFest a number of years ago, MontPy, and I think it was the RuneFest I was at, said that, you know, we're going to fix 4-tick auto-attacking and we're going to bring out a replacement to it. And that, of course, still hasn't arrived because it's a question of, do you fix magic in terms of combat or do you put out a new boss? That's what it comes down to.
Pi has been making some incredible things. The combat people basically worship the ground he stands on. And I think, like, lately what he's been doing is putting out a whole bunch of fixes that people have been asking for years, but he just only now has had the opportunity to do them. So I think something here is the combat people just really need to be able to be given that opportunity to just go back and fix some things, take the time to balance and whatnot. But a lot of the time, people are also angling for a new boss at the same time, and they can't do everything at once.
Yeah, yeah. And
hey, go ahead, I'm just glad that we're not getting the axe for once. Let someone else get the Reaper.
We don't fear the Reaper. Yeah, and from what it sounds like the Combat Council has their ear fairly close to the ground in terms of what's acceptable and what's not. When it comes to what the PVM and combat community is after,
I don't think you have to have your ear to the ground. No,
they make sure you hear.
Yeah, but you know, I think overall this has been a good Q&A, and then we, you know, get to the fun topic of death costs. Ooh. And here's the way they see it from the Combat Council, and I think we largely hit on this in our death cost bit. And if you're doing PVM, they say in general you're making a profit. When you learn a boss, you die a lot. And, you know, if you have a 20 mil death cost, you're going to make that cost back, but it will be made back over time, and that's the key word there. It'll be made back over time. They also factor in consumables as well. And, you know, they want to address death costs. They're too high at the top end. And they said whether it's some kind of soft cap or a hard cap and where those caps would be, those are all valid options to look at. And, you know, I think that's basically what the conclusion of our podcast was this question right here.
Yep. Exactly.
I think any kind of caps involved would have to be adjusted in some ways as far as inflation went. So that makes that kind of a tricky subject to get into.
Yeah, yeah.
1 million, not what it was before.
Right, and I mean, it becomes just a question of what's acceptable, right, in terms of death. Because if you're going to go to Telos and you have 15 million death preset, as we talked about in the past, and you get hit with a connection lag, is that really your fault?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you're trying to, you know, do some no food run, that is your fault. So
yeah, like, and a matter of seeing where to put in the high risk.
Yeah, exactly. And there's so many different things along that perspective as well that need to be addressed. And
well, why couldn't – I mean, I think you could solve a lot. We have a hard mode, right? What if hard mode was tied to also tied not only to higher mechanics or more mechanics and all that, but a higher death cost? Normal was normal. It's balanced the way it is, whereas easy would be pretty light death cost so that you could practice it. So that, like, when you're good enough, now you bump it up to normal. You're like, okay, if I do die, I'll just take the normal death cost. Let's right. say you make hard mode a little bit more rewarding.
But when you do that, you also have to look into the loot of normal and tone that down as well. And you also, of course, need to tone down the difficulty in this. And for every boss that's out there, you need to do this. And, you know, if I was doing this, if I was designing this, I'd use something in the Elder God Wars dungeon as a blueprint template for this in terms of, you know, maybe, you know, three or four cases in this dungeon. And then if it's successful after that, both in terms of, you know, hey, maybe this one's going to have a limited death cost based on how your difficulty was or if you're just learning it or something to that effect, then if this blueprint is successful, then you can take it out to various bosses on a case-by-case basis. So you do your Teloses and your Viragos and your Araxors and Nexes and so on and so forth, and over time just roll them out to, you know, the hotspots as if it was. And that's how I see this problem being addressed going forward. I don't see a blanket, you know, just, you know, coming out of nowhere. We're going to change the way death costs work and bam, it's done. I don't see that happening.
I definitely like the idea of using new in-game content as a prototype as opposed to, say, a beta, which no one really does in practice.
Right. And when it comes to the RuneScape betas, no one takes them seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And
especially with combat.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the worst.
That's how we got EOC, the first generation. But that's a topic for a different day. But overall, I think it was very productive. Now, the next question was thoughts on Switchscape, which I paid close attention to on this one because, you know, I absolutely hate that. I don't believe that you should, you know, be going into combat and changing your gear halfway through it, or, you know, needing to have different prayers bound to your mouse, so you only need to have it activated for, you know, one tick here and then another tick there. You need a different prayer. I don't like that type of game style personally on that. And with this, there's a contrast of opinion in the Combat Council. Now, what they say when they design a new boss or PVM experience, they always design it so that you don't need to use Switchscape to kill the thing. But there are cases for the best DPS, you're going to need it. And with that, ModPie says that, you know, this is basically the same as everything. You have your base case, which, you know, covers 90% of the player base. But when it comes down to it, there's always going to be that 10% that want to push things further. And that's where the Switchscape discussion comes in. But I think even at the basic level of Raksha, you did need to switch prayers quite frequently, didn't you?
Yeah, at least that's less Switchscape in the sense of bringing a 10,000 different things along.
Yeah, that's like prayer switch. I mean, that's an old school, or I mean, that's a technique even you can find in old school. Like, I don't really think of that as the same as putting on a new wardrobe, you know?
Yeah. Ripping rings off your fingers mid-fight.
Yeah.
And you know, the question was actually asked with this, why can't we wear 10 rings? Because we have 10 fingers.
There you go. There you go.
The more, the better, right?
Yeah.
Mod Orion's not a fan of it for 90% of its implementation, but those are the main bullet points I took off this live stream. Most of the other stuff that came up was just a little miscellanea here and there that doesn't need to be discussed. So that was the Combat Council. Next up, of course, lore. 20 years of lore Q&A. And this one was jam-packed. We had, in the first hour, mods Mark, Osborne, and Stu with mod JD hosting. And, you know, I think it's always fun to get those ones together, Osborne, Mark, and Stu, for
I really
lore.
Like the approach they took here, with the first half being more sort of generally focused, more about stories and how they get told. And then on the second half, you've got the more modern relevant things for all the antsy lore hounds looking for the next fix.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, some fun little nuggets here and there at the end of the modern one as well. But starting off with this one, what has your biggest lore inspiration been? And, you know, real world movies, book series, and comic books for Maude Osborne. Your It was based on Hellraiser. The Needle Skips was based on her story. For Maude Stew, he's taken influences from Beetlejuice, and Maude Mark, he said thousands of different people.
Mark is definitely the kind of, he was talking about at some point in the stream that he's a traditional storyteller.
Yeah.
Likes to tell stories by the fireside. And
then just add a little bit of a twist along the way to it as well.
And, yeah.
And that was actually the next question. With
That's
this
my
one is
question, the next one.
Yeah, it was. I didn't put names on here, but I noticed a couple of clan questers in here. You and Kebab Thief as well were in there. So you asked what kind of stories do you like telling most? Personal stories or saving the worlds or other species time period, perhaps, maybe? I don't know.
I have noticed a few things about the different J-Mods and their respective storytelling styles. I'll always say that, for instance, Maude Raven tends to be more about the personal stories and the character focus, whereas Maude Jack, you get more of a world-building, top-down approach.
Right. That makes sense. And, I mean, even if you look back, you can see that in pretty much everything that they've touched. And on the personal stories vein, Stu likes his personal stories as well, such as Owen's characters in Death of Chivalry or finishing up the Brink of Extinction arc, which are two very, very small quest lines and story arcs that you see in RS, yeah. But nonetheless, they're self-contained.
I talked to Maude Stew at One Room Fest, where every year they have their Find the J-Mod thing, where you have to do a certain little task or whatever for each J-Mod to get their signature on your little booklet. And for one year for Maude Stew, that was, what would you most like in a Death of Chivalry sequel?
Oh.
And we were talking about, yeah, the different things to prioritize. I remember I was with Diana at the time, and I said I'd really like more on the Sir Owen story. And he said he'd love something along that, the personal story, the story of the corrupted temple knight, eh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember Diana saying that she'd really like more of the Sarah Doman angle, where you get more of a rounding out, because there are a lot of people who hate Sarah Doman because of that quest. And a bit time for a bit of a balance, eh?
Yeah, and you know, we see that in pretty much everything that comes along. So, I mean, it just shows what depth we got in this game, even in the smallest of quests. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Like Death of Chivalry being something you can do right off the bat as a new player.
Yeah. Osborne likes scenario-driven quests where the idea might be to explore a specific type of gameplay. Examples he gave were World Wakes, you're besieged by the world, You Are It is the stuck-in-a-cursed clue scroll kind of thing as well.
Yeah. He likes high concept, I suppose.
Yeah, and same with Needle Skips, he mentioned as well, being
about to say that, yeah.
The dictionary method.
Yes. It was a really interesting approach to a quest. Like he was mentioning earlier, the game Her Story is something where you basically have a database and you type different words into it to activate different things. And that, of course, is the entire concept of the Needle Skips, just applied to a very small scale, very personal story. And it's still really one of my favorite recent quests.
Yeah.
One of my favorite quests in general.
And it's not linear as well, which is a huge departure for RS.
And you can approach it any way you want. Like the space bar is, can just type in all the words you want.
Be done in 5 minutes.
Can puzzle it out.
Yeah. 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 And from Mark, he says, as an actor, it comes down to how you're going to play the certain character. And for telling stories in RuneScape, it's when one can put their own spin on that story. And he sees stories that are really cool that in his own eyes. And these are the ones that are demanded to be told by the community. And then they put their own spin on it. And specifically mentions the origins of Armadyl and the quest that shall not be named, Rite of Passage.
Yes, I appreciate you not saying its name there.
We had to work hard. We had to work hard last year on the Stormguard lore episode to not include that in the title.
the suffering. The poor Armadillians. Someday,
yeah, the Kentucky Fried Aviancies. That was another clip from that episode.
Delicious.
Oh, I miss those Mark kind of quests. But anyways. And I think the next question was from Kebab about languages in-game, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What was your inspiration for languages like the Goblin language and the Dragonkin language? And, you know, we know that the Elves language is focused on Welsh, and when creating one of a kind, the Dragonkin quest, one of the first ones, they knew part of it would be building the lexicon, and they came up with the syntax as actually part of the puzzle in one of a kind, and from that end, Dragonkin was almost reverse engineered from that puzzle, and that's all we got on that. Yeah,
the language approach to world building and getting yourself deeper and deeper into the story of a quest. And it's interesting how they started off there, but they've been expanding ever since. Like Orthon, of course, you've got things like Cranon's poetry in there that I've been getting altogether far too deep into trying to decode.
Yeah,
but yeah. There's always this ongoing so much stuff to get your teeth into. One thing
I thought of after Orthon was, what if there was a quest that took place entirely in the Dragonkin language?
Oh.
And the only discussion and dialogue you had was your player's own inner head thinking of, what do these words mean?
That's quite too much.
That'd be intense, that's for sure, but yeah, certainly for the very most hardcore of lore players. I think something like a mini quest approach would be better for that, so the people who don't want to do it can avoid it, but
yeah,
the people who want to get really into something like that
because after Desperate Measures and Orthon, I thought, okay, we've seen these Dragonkin letters numerous times now. We don't know how to pronounce them. We don't know how to pronounce these words. And, you know, it still feels like we're puzzle building at that point. And I thought it would be interesting if we could, you know, actually in some way kind of learn more of that language going forward. That's what I thought.
So just a bit of an intensified version of the one-of-a-kind language puzzle, hey?
Yeah, kind of. But, you know, have it be something you can learn from and, you know, maybe take something away from rather than just having it be a puzzle.
Mm-hmm. The Dragonkin primer that you get in that quest, it actually gives you an option to toggle on or off whether you want things to be in all Dragonkin or in all translators as much as you can.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right. Did that exist on release?
Yes, it did. I'm pretty sure, anyway.
All right. I don't remember that.
Essentially have a difficulty mode there. So if there was hypothetically something like that, you could have it toggle on to auto-translate for the noobs or the people who just want to get through it.
Right. When it came to the Tazar language, it was a matter of carrying on the torch from the past quest and content, which, I mean, that kind of makes sense from that.
I remember Stu here saying how when they did the last quest in the series as being voice acted, and suddenly everyone realized that that word is actually pronounced Tazar without the T.
Oh.
Yeah. And how he gets really insistent about that.
All right. Fair enough. Well, we'll make that note going forward for this here. Mark said that languages are created because a puzzle is needed or some flavor is needed for the content. And the Tazar counting system was inspired by a Nordic character design, in particular their base 12 counting system. And in fact, of course, they have 12 fingers on there.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Yeah. Then Golden Path leading up to Menaphos also involved building the Menaphite language, which is another case where they did that same kind of thing.
So it was interesting because Mod JD was hosting the stream here, and though he's a community guy instead of a lore guy, he actually had something to contribute because, of course, he was the one involved in the Golden Path. And I'm not sure if you remember this, but I was heavily into the Golden Path back when it was going. I think I actually contributed something to your RSBMB when it happened.
Yeah, you did. You did. And didn't you also get a piece of lore from this in the game or something to that effect too? Or am I thinking of something else?
I didn't. You're thinking of something else, which will actually come up in the next half.
All right.
But yes. But yeah, there was a competition there, a writing competition for the library, though I didn't get anything into that. But yeah, the Menophos ARG, that was really in-depth. And by the end of that, I could pretty much read the Menophite script from memory. Didn't have to cross-reference or anything.
Nice.
It was really involved. I loved it.
Next up, why penguins? Well, this is actually a really interesting story that they have to tell on this. And, you know, the Lumbridge sheep, when Lumbridge remodeled, there was going to be this thing in the sheep field that shouldn't have been there. It could have been a monster, or it could have, you know, just been some kind of weird thing in the field. But the artist in question came up with a couple of penguins that were wearing a sheep costume. And as a result of this, Maud Nancy saw this and decided to create a quest based upon this. And this was back in the era when J-Mods would have their own quest series that they would work on.
That really surprised me. I didn't know the thing in the Lumbridge field actually came before the Penguin Quest series.
Neither did I. And
yeah.
The funnest part about this is there's also some discussion about Maud Nancy, who has since left and apparently is working in makeup artistry in Hollywood. She built each Penguin Quest to be sort of encapsulating a specific genre of a movie as well. And they said they wanted to carry that on with the Back to the Freezer. Did either of you want more Penguin Quests after hearing this?
No.
Back to the Freezer was a bit kind of tore the opinion, didn't it?
Yeah.
I think it was decent as a bottle quest and stuff, but it's very one of those ones where it's very clearly a bottle quest and kind of shows the themes of it.
It was also felt kind of like a reboot, so to speak, of it. Yeah.
It was not accessible, I will tell you that.
Right. Okay. I can see why you might not like Penguin Quest now that you mentioned that.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever gotten it badly wrong when designing lore in game stories? You know, maybe forgotten some previous lore, or wrote a contradiction into a story, or not having things meshed together properly? Well, they said...
This one came up.
Yeah, and you know, they said, you know, sometimes mess-ups in the past inspire a story in the future. They didn't specifically say what some of the mess-ups would have been, but they did say that after Heart of Stone, there was the Chronicle lore books that identified an elder god being napping under two specific mountains. And, you know, it's... Sorry, what was that?
Big enough to stretch between two mountains. Yeah. All on Earth.
It's, of course, Ice Mountain, but the mistake was made that Wen was napping under Wolf Mountain instead.
I think a lot of people forget that White Wolf Mountain... No, they forget that Ice Mountain exists because White Wolf Mountain was the classic, well, it still is the free-to-play member's border.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, Ice Mountain's also important because that's the gateway to the Dwarven Mine. It's also involved in some quest that's required to unlock Gold Rune that I'm forgetting the name of currently, the archaeology material.
That's Defender of Varrok, I think that is.
Okay, Defender of Varrok, right. And you know how much Gold Rune you need when you're leveling archaeology up.
Oh, yeah. There are a lot of us down there around the release.
Yeah.
Crowd down.
Concept of signature heroes. If anybody wants to hear more about those, the game basically wanted an iconic set of young characters that the player could relate to, that they could tell stories about. And in hindsight, it's really difficult to build characters that your players can relate to. It's basically a 50-50 shot of whether or not they'll relate to them. And the signature heroes may make an appearance this year.
Yeah, I think really in hindsight, the problem with the signature heroes was that instead of building up these characters over a period of time, they instead just introduced them right off the bat in 2011, saying these characters are these things and you will enjoy them.
Yep, you hit the nail on the head right there. That's exactly right.
I think, in hindsight, I have actually seen quite a few more players enjoying the signature heroes. Like, as they've as they've been given content, and also people who have come in after their introduction. Like, I've seen new player posts of people having done Stolen Hearts and thinking, oh, I really get along with Ozan now. He's my bro in game. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, the problem back then was that, you know, hey, you say a signature hero, and you could have thought of five different other people who would have been the signature heroes of RuneScape.
Yeah, and they said, oh, but they're too tied to their own quest lines, and now all the signature heroes are also tied to their own quest lines.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
All right, and now the big one. You know, everybody, of course, remembers The World Wakes and the beginning of RuneScape 3 and the Sixth Age, and the question was, how was the decision made to go ahead with The World Wakes and this narrative shift? And it came down to the fact that the team knew they wanted to do something big with RuneScape 3 launching, with its storyline, the narrative in terms of bringing it all together. And Mark's initial reaction was a combined reaction of fear, disbelief, and excitement. And the idea of buying Mark's support was that killing Guthix was for a greater good. And he also said this was at a time when he was moving away from the day-to-day operations of running the RuneScape team as a lead designer, as the handoff from Mark to Osborne, so to speak. And he felt that Guthix's plea for the World Guardian to forget himself resonates similarly to having Mark move on as well. But I mean, who could ever forget Mod Mark? Just like who could ever forget Guthix? But when it comes to the conflicts of interest or the stories that ultimately end up going a certain way, Mark feels angry about, or he has felt angry about how the Dragonkin story went, because he had his own idea of where he wanted it to go, but it went in a completely different direction. But at the same time, he loves the fact that someone has gone in that different direction, and his frustration came from that he was so passionate about building that he wanted to create that. But it was that same twist on storyline that he mentioned earlier that made him actually like the direction they took.
Yeah. I have to, like, I like the direction the Dragonkin storyline has gone.
I think I've seen it said that what Mark really wanted to do with the Dragonkin was just recreate the Dark Crystal, basically have a tribute to all his favorite things. So I haven't actually watched it myself, but I hear a lot of things about it and its tone. It's a Jim Henson movie, and it's one of the two things Mod Mark mentioned earlier in the stream about it being his tonal influences, the other one being The Princess Bride. He says, watch both of those movies, and you've basically got his approach to the story. And you've got, of course, that very classic RuneScape-y feel. And
That's interesting. I missed what he said about The Princess Bride. And looking back at that, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I'm terrible, but I only watched it for the first time recently. And just watching that, I just immediately, so much of the comedy I've absorbed in several things, including RuneScape, just clicked and made sense. It's a massive influence, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, I actually talked about this in a Informer article, how, you know, there's different leadership and whatnot, and it filtered down from the CEO at the time to the designers. And, you know, I didn't give enough attention in that to Osborne and Mark, but I did talk a lot about how The World Wakes was effectively this point where everything just seemed to, you know, step it up a notch, and we went into this whole grander scheme of things with that. And, you know, first it was the Sliskay arc, and then now, of course, it's the Dragonkin arc. And, you know, we've been going on with this for almost 8 years since the Sixth Age started, you guys.
It has been that long, huh?
I feel like we should have made more progress, but in any case.
I think we're doing well now, at least. I have a couple more things to say on this point.
Yeah, please do.
Okay, so first of all, I've seen JMods talk about the different approach they've had, like, from the higher-ups, basically. So The World Wakes very much apparently comes from a time when they would basically be prescribed what they had to do with the story. Like, we are going to do a Sixth Age. We are going to do a Battle of Lumbridge. You have to make this work. Whereas these days, I guess with the Mod Warden approach in general, they are just given, we want something big, and you make up what that can be.
Yeah, and then, you know, everything else will fit around that.
Or freedom. I do like that approach, rather than just being forced to stick to certain lines.
Yeah, and you know, in hindsight, I think they needed to do that for the Sixth Age to start off in 2013, because it was an effective reset button. It, of course, you know, pushed a lot of people away, combined with EOC in November of 2012, I think. But it was that chance to change the conversation from what people had been talking about for the last 3 or 4 months, the evolution of combat, to this Sixth Age, to the World Wakes, and to the Battle of Lumbridge on that.
And instead they got something extremely disorienting. I've seen stories of people logging in 2013 and just being immediately assailed with this cutscene that they did not understand at all. Oh, yeah. And on another note, they were talking about there being essentially three eras of questing. So that they started out with just at the beginning of game where any JMod did whatever they wanted and lore just sort of came about as it did. JMods had their own quest lines and they did whatever they felt like. And I guess sort of while Gothic Sleeps, Ritual of the Majorat came out of that, them being Paul Gower's.
Big one.
Mm-hmm. And then the second era, basically, was when they tried to make everything big and new, starting from the World Wakes.
That was your Sliske arc?
Oh, yeah. And just trying to make lore a big old focus again.
And reusing existing characters and threads.
Well, that was what they were saying is the third era. So nowadays, they're a lot more conscious about introducing new things and a lot more hesitant to do so. They're going,
and it's all heavily curated.
Yeah, we have a lot of stuff in game now. Why don't we just do things with it rather than really just overloading the players with too much new? Because you got to tie up some threads, you got to coalesce things together, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I think it's fair to take that approach. And, you know, the consistent storylines have helped everyone. They've helped us greatly. I loved having archaeology as our 2020 central theme. I love the fact that, you know, we're getting an advancing story and, you know, we're not waiting 8 months or maybe a year plus for the next quest. It's been advanced slowly but surely through the updates along the way. So I think we're in a really good spot, and I hope that doesn't sound too biased. Mm-hmm.
I think it checks out, yeah, as opposed to the absolute explosion of 2013, everything going all over the place. We've got things like The Death of Chivalry, where we're still waiting on a sequel.
Yeah, and, you know, when it comes down to those old ones like that, it's just a question, they said, of, you know, figuring out how you can resolve something like that when it fits into the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, in those kind, they need resolutions versus, I think what we get now is, it's a more complete package, right? So we're getting lore as part of every update. So this world building that they had to do early on, we're getting in different forms now. It's not just in a quest. So I think that frees them up a little bit, because they have an overarching vision, and then as long as they're staying within that, then that they get to, you know, branch out and make it like even richer than what we have.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It feels more holistic these days, I'll say that.
Yeah, and, you know, people always say, you know, you want to go back to 2007, you know, having these, you know, quests coming out every other week and whatnot, or do you want to, you know, sit in this curated experience today? And, you know, we talked about this with archaeology. It felt like a showroom kind of finish, and I don't know if we've hit that level yet since archaeology, but it's definitely a better fit and finish than it was all those years ago. And I don't know if I'd want to go back, honestly.
I think we're in a good state.
Tanis, would you go back?
No. I you know when I want to go back to? There is one era I would go back to.
Mm-hmm.
The voiced quest.
Oh,
me,
yes.
That was the highlight. That was the high water mark. I really liked questing at that point. I've tapered off since then.
Yeah, and, yeah. I mean, it comes down to expense. But, you know, I think we've been shown that, you know, nothing is off the table in the modern era. So I think that's
Last time I was on here, we were talking about a potential text-to-speech for all quests.
And oh, that would be- yeah, we did. Yeah, okay. See, I never let it go. It is my bailiwick.
It's just like enough. My prestige system was.
Right.
Yeah. All right. And, you know, then we move on into the second hour with Mods Rolly, Jack, and Raven for this. They had a bit of a update on the Once Upon a Time mini quest series coming next week. Is going to span the most of the year for this. And, you know, I was a bit surprised this week when I saw that it was going to be a mini quest series, but they addressed that. And, you know, they went back and forth on this, and they say the difference will be negligible. It won't have an effect on the story. And the only difference is if there's going to be a quest journal. And with it spanning the entire year, they don't know how many parts it's going to be. And it's entirely possible that based on the feedback that they could make it an actual quest once it's all said and done, like a recipe for disaster kind of thing.
Yeah, just what is the real dividing line between quests and mini quests these days? Like Rowley said, it's basically just whether there's a quest journal or not. But like recently, we've had a lot of mini quests that are 2-second things, like the Rapture intro mini quest.
Yeah. See, well, what was it? Was it last week, Shane?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Those were just fetch an item quest. Like, those weren't even what I consider a RuneScape mini quest. No. Like, RuneScape always has some kind of something. Even if it's a slime falling in love, there is a story. And to me, that's kind of the difference. That's what makes, you know, even a mini quest for RuneScape is different than a normal fetch quest in any other game.
Yeah.
I guess I actually appreciated those little mini quests we got like at the beginning of the year, but I feel what made them interesting to me, what made them fun to me, was the flavor they packed into them, because there's a lot of flavor text in there. There's a lot of fun dialogue and whatnot.
Yeah, lots of back references and whatnot.
Not really so much of a story now you mention it, yeah.
Yeah. And it was at this point where Mod JD's stream froze, and they got some fun little frozen smirks from him and whatnot. But also some little tidbits about what's going to be in Once Upon a Time. They're not saying exactly what it's going to be, but it will explore the past, present, and future of RuneScape and tell the story of the player. It's going to involve the character of Closure, which was introduced in the 2017 Halloween event.
And I remember Closure.
Yeah.
I remember him. Like I was saying, this is the one where I got something in-game, because they had a story contest here. So okay. Closure did his Halloween event, where you go around to these different locations, you do a little bit of interactive content at each one, and then you get a story for each one.
So, and which one was yours?
My one was called Family Reunion. It's not the best thing I've done looking back on it, but it's still nice to have it in-game.
Oh, that's awesome.
Hey. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, really proud of that. But yeah, and Closure's whole thing is that he tells the stories of people who haven't had their stories told, essentially. And I think that's a really good concept for a character, and naturally a very one that's very conducive to stories, isn't it?
Yeah, and Closure is also tied to death.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him. You're one step, outside death's office, you have Closure. Yeah. And, you know, they said, no, we're not killing the player character. But the next piece of evidence that really raised eyebrows was that Rolomia, is that how you say that? Rolomia,
yeah, I said it.
The emissary of Sliske, is also going to be involved in this quest.
Now, there's a character who hasn't had Closure.
Can you imagine what we're going to unearth in this?
And we got a little bit of him in us, remember?
Yeah.
I'm wondering what they're going to do with that. Because she's the only one who knows about it, essentially.
Yeah.
And there was that little odd little blackout.
At the end of Endgame, right?
people going forward have assumed that the Sliskay, little bit of Sliskay is still in the player. But who knows, maybe they're going with snuck into Alomia instead. Though there's not really a clear way as how that would work. However Jaggers wants to make it.
I think that'd be really neat if that's an angle they went on this one.
But yes, she is someone in need of closure. They were saying on the stream that she's basically in denial. But how much denial is there really if that whole thing happened? Because at that point, it's not just denial. It's knowing a thing that genuinely no one else knows, which is, oh, he's not gone. Oh. Can't get rid of him.
Yeah, and that's where my mind starts racing about all the different possibilities that we could see for that. Oh, but yeah. But we'll wait till we have prologue. Or prologue? Is that the term for it? The foreshadowing next week on that.
Yes. One more thing. On the 2017 Halloween event, that was a bit of an essentially mini-quest thing that they then did a poll on to see if they wanted to make it permanent. I, of course, was biased on this and voted in favor, but
yeah.
Eventually more people voted against it, and
which
so it was just temporary content.
That's absolutely absurd. That's, I mean, you put content in-game, it shouldn't disappear, I think, unless there's a very good reason.
No, not if we have Cabbage Face Punch stupid game.
I mean, like that.
Be careful. Be careful the way you speak, Tanis.
Come on. That thing is still floating in our punch bowl.
I think and Tanis, at this point, I'm going to tell you that, you know, I never did follow up on this. And I don't know if he still wants to do it, but once Draz wanted to come on the show and outline his Brassica Prime hypothesis.
Of course.
Okay.
Just be careful when you talk about cabbages.
Cabbages. Oh, I don't care about cabbages. You can make whatever mini game you want. Just don't make it a dumb punch of monkey in the face.
Anything you say can and will be used against you.
All right. Moving on into the questions. How much do older stories influence newer stories? And, you know, this seems like a very common question to answer with this one. The answer was very much so. RuneScape's not a playground to tell everyone's own story, and the emphasis is now working on the carefully curated stories of the past, and consideration is added when adding anything new, which is something you've already touched on, Questscaping. And
the example I use here is the Fire Warrior of Lazarkas in Stormguard, because there's a bit of content from 2002, I think, that all of a sudden you have with new context and new game lore, and I really appreciate them doing that.
We really loved that when we went over that archaeology lore for Stormguard. But now it's a matter of looking at what plot threads work for telling the story and then building the story around that. And how the hell we're going to shoehorn Elemental Workshop into anything with this methodology, I don't know.
Well, hey, one of the ones coming up is soul energy, of course. You've got soul runes. You got your World Guardian soul all messed up.
I guess.
Hey, there's an angle there.
Ambitions about bringing lore into wider aspects of the game with a cohesive storyline. The goal is to bring as many of the updates as planned for a year into a continual storyline, and individual quest lines of the past were self-contained. And Once Upon a Time will also pick up on some of these elements of this year's theme as well. Of course, the Elder Gods.
Okay. That's kind of sounds interesting.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
And for that,
you know what's the best part? I don't think there's any other game out there that does stuff like this.
Not in the same way, no.
No, no.
RuneScape is very much its own beast, isn't it?
No. All right.
One particularly questing in the way that it works is so different.
Mm-hmm. Next up. Sorry. Continue on.
No.
All right.
Fan theory.
Next up, have you ever read a fan theory and thought, damn, that would have been better than what we did? for Mod Raven, the best example of this was Ripper Demons. He read a theory where the bandages were a parasite replacing someone's skin, and he thought that would be pretty creepy.
Classic Raven.
That would be creepy.
Getting slowly mummified and not being able to stop it. And I'm sure there's a horror movie out there that deals with something like that.
Lovely.
How many notebooks are there that contain lore? Mod Raven pointed around the room he was in to various other books containing lore. Lots of books everywhere. Same thing with Jack.
Mod Raven. Something that happened on here. Yeah, Mod Raven wrote them in code.
Yeah, wrote his notes in code to prevent people from reading them if they were accidentally caught on the camera on stream.
And then he forgot how to read the code. Beautiful. Self-teaching Da Vinci.
Maybe he's the Zodiac Killer.
No, they can actually read the Zodiac Killer's notes now.
Yeah, I saw that. That's actually really interesting. They deciphered one of the last ones. I think there's still another one that's not deciphered on that.
I mean, all we have to do is just ask him. He's in Congress.
Cruz on in there?
Yeah, Ted Cruz has actually retweeted things talking about the Zodiac Killer before, too. He's all in on that meme.
That sounds like something the Zodiac Killer would do.
Right? Hey.
But there aren't huge essays of lore just sitting around, if anybody was wondering on that. And, you know, in general, if they write something about the lore, it's there for a purpose. And it's going to be used.
Yeah, if we crack the Zodiac Killer's notes, we got to get them on Mod Ravens now. That's how it works.
Lots of Mod Raven theme stuff here. have you ever... Oh, I got too excited about that. Have you ever... it just happened. Sporadically, it's not that I'm excited to answer the next question or anything. have you ever considered that sometimes you might kill NPCs too quickly? Mod Raven talked about how NPCs needed to be emotionally broken, spiritually broken, and then just broken, and then ultimately needing to just suffer before killing them. But Mod Osborne put a pin in that.
Oh, God. I think as someone who does a bit of writing myself, I will generally prefer the approach of using a character more as opposed to just getting rid of them. But your death can be effective, as Raven knows too well.
Yeah.
Apparently torture, too.
Yay! Yeah. I remember Nomad's Elegy or something. There was a part where you're interrogating one of the Legions and... there's an option to torture them. And Raven wanted to go further with that. But no. And of course, there's Merak and Kindred Spirit, isn't there? Just
Tannis, were you on for Nomad's Elegy? Or was that not when you were doing that, whenever that was with us here?
Mm. No, I remember torture and the Birthright.
I remember that bit.
All right, yeah. I'm gonna get it together here, but I'm absolutely on Mod Raven's path with that. And, you know, they asked then for a list of NPCs that Mod Raven killed, and he said he couldn't remember. And then Mod Stu says it's not right to be killing them if you can't remember who you killed.
He who passed sentence must wield the pen.
So we're going with Mod is definitely the Zodiac Killer, is definitely Ted Cruz then, hey?
Yeah, or Raven.
Or Raven.
But, you know, in general, it's better to just, you know, use the character, as they said. And, you know, they did this at the end of all quest lines in the past where they would kill a character off. And this had the side effect of depleting characters that they could have been using today. And I immediately thought, R.I.P. Hazelmere.
Well, I would think if you hadn't killed half of the NPCs in one quest, maybe.
I want Cyrus's content. There he goes. But yeah, I think at one point they were talking about the Zanuck effect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because while it is good to have characters around, you can also definitely get to the point of overuse and overdoing the going back on your old decisions, eh?
Yeah, and you know that also involved how many times is Zanuck going to be brought back to life and whatnot. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, no one's dead until you got a body. You know,
that's the rule. That's a rule of 24.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah, but is there any chance of old school lore coming into RuneScape? They always say maybe because you know nothing is committed or dismissed outright, and the goal is to maintain general pillars of lore between the two games, like Prif. Keep the essence of content of the same, but it's unlikely that we'd see a verbatim Dragon Slayer 2 or Monkey Madness 2. And prime examples are Anachronia compared to their Fossil Island and the Prif versus their Prif. And they said Zaya in Old School was created to have a space for Old School RuneScape to tell their own stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always interested in the contrast of lore between the two games. Because, of course, they're going their own direction with the Vampire series. And it's a really interesting one where they can build on the slight missteps of RS3 and do their own thing. I really liked their Sins of the Father. But another thing I'm really liking is, of course, there's Anachronia versus Fossil Island. And you've got a character that's in common between the two of them. You've got Skekka as a really prominent character, the only inhabitant of Fossil Island on Old School RuneScape and having her own little house there and tons of lore books. And in RuneScape 3, they bring her into Orthanc, and while she's got a very different story there, it's clearly the same character. So that's quite interesting, an Old School originated character getting the RS3 twist. I'm always interested in how the two games can interact and influence each other like that.
Yeah, and you know, I also love seeing the opposite as well, how their Prif is completely opposite of ours.
That's again building on the what they feel, I guess, might be a misstep or not quite suited for RuneScape 3.
Yeah, exactly. And the last tidbit is that there's an additional mini quest coming on Monday that's going to be wrapped around an archaeology mystery, and they talked about why they needed to do it with a mini quest. It's because the archaeology level requirement just would have been way too high for anything that would have been lore or quest-based going forward. And I'm really interested to see that.
I've been sort of lurking the official lore Discord discussions.
I think it's got to be something Karadet, right?
Yeah, everyone sort of made an assumption, and Mud Rally is sort of not quite saying it, but basically we know that it's going to be that. And yeah, the high level, the Vault of Shadows. Shall we just spoil it and go for it?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that before on the Lore Diggers episode for that, so.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. So it's Trindine time. They're using her for something. And yeah, so they're saying that this mini quest in particular is just going to be two or three lines to allow players to complete the mystery with a lower archaeology level.
But, and we knew that she was going to be involved in something, or that mystery would be involved in something, because, you know, you don't start the skill off at Karadet and end it at Karadet, the last thing before the Orthanc Encore. So
there's a few interesting things here. Like, for instance, well, you've got, so you're bringing her into the game. You've got this big entry with the archaeology skill, and now she's got to be used for something. And I think they mentioned Jack and Raven working on a bit of content that's coming later in the year that's going to need to make use of the character being brought in here, who we basically know to be Trindine now.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting, because I just feel like there's so many unanswered questions with that dig site in particular.
So, yeah, and it's going to be interesting because they've been talking about a buried city with the Elder God Wars dungeon, which we've all basically taken to be Sentist, and of course having Trindine around plays into that.
It's going to start kicking off, and it's going to be just so good. But we're going to move on to our questions right now. We have two of them that are kind of tangentially related to things we've been talking about. But before we do that, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters for this week. This week, I'd like to thank Andrew C., Brock H., Cameron, Christian S., Cook Me Plocks, Diana, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jade W., Jason S., Joe M., John P., Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Pernasius, Rastafa, Ricky A., Samantha R., Soup Finder, Stabeev, The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It means the world to us. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing here at Update without you guys, and, you know, everything from the monthly bits to the round tables. They're just oh so good. And if you want to be a part of any of this, or you want to, you know, help out, or you want a specific monthly bit, you get the entire back catalog for as little as $1 a month. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention at the start of the month, as well as access to high-quality stereo versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out each and every week on the podcast, in addition to clips that we use for the clip show. And, you know, we have our monthly bit, Inside Update, Roundtable, which information will be posted about very soon on when we're doing that. And, you know, should we ever reach that mystical $500 a month here, we'll be doing the Hot Ones Challenge, Tanis and myself. I think we found an accomplice with that one. Parnassia said he'd join us for that.
That's true. That's true. At least we'll all suffer together.
But, you know, just thanks the world to the Patreon supporters. And if you want to learn more about that, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. And for Patreon supporters out there, you still have time to complete our survey before the end of the month. We're looking to see what we can do for our Patreon offerings this year. And, you know, we'd love to hear your thoughts on that. So please do fill out that survey if you're a Patreon supporter. You can find it stickied on the Patreon website at patreon.com/RSBNB. All right. First question is from Trekkie. And, you know, Trekkie's an occasional guest on the show, but he's also a questioner and player and listener. And I think I will read this one. It fits right in. He says, Captain's Log, November 6, 2006. It's been 15 years since I started the balloon ride from Entrena and met a fellow adventurer. He hasn't come back in a very long time. I do wonder what there is left for me to do. Maybe Sarah Doman will have plans for me in the near future. Last time he was here, I heard my god left a hole in the ground by Lumbridge. I do wonder if God still has a plan for me after so many years. Would be nice to travel the balloon with the adventurer again and boldly going where no one has gone before. AKA, if you were with Jagex, what would you do with Auguste from the Enlightened Journey quest? And he says, maybe we'll finally see my Wookiee. So for anybody who isn't aware, Enlightened Journey is a bottle quest that unlocked the balloon network way back in 2006. And its character, Auguste, is based off of Captain Picard with his number one and various officers out there. It's one of my favorite quests in-game, just for those references and whatnot. And I've been hoping for a sequel to Enlightened Journey of some way. I don't know what that would be at this point, but it's definitely something I want. What do you think of the Enlightened Journey series questscaping?
You know, I never actually realized there were Star Trek references because I only watched Star Trek, I think, last year. And so, yeah, so I guess I got to revisit that now as someone who gets all the references. But yeah, it's like, if we want to do a sequel, how about we just up the stakes a little, go from travel all over Gillenor to traveling to different planes? Like, imagine we were talking about the quest that couldn't be named, and wouldn't a planet like Abena be perfect for a hot air balloon transport system?
Oh, that'd be good.
Hey. Yeah, it'd be quite challenging to navigate with all the winds, but hey, advanced puzzle design.
Another thing I thought of that, you know, I kind of just, you know, thought of off the cuff, and, you know, it's kind of been taken the air out of this with the remote farming spells. What if you had remote balloon monitors for your farming patches?
Little weather balloons.
That would be interesting, weather balloons.
See, I'm thinking more along the lines of bring them back for the nostalgia, and we'll make it so that, like, there was some big calamity, and he kind of saved us, but he also kind of caused it in the end. And we'll give him some closure with the friend he talked about.
Hey.
Are you describing season one of Picard?
Oh, never mind. I thought I heard something somewhere. Picked that up somewhere before.
For all the references in the quest, August A says, I want to explore new frontiers. And your character says, and go where no man has gone before. Of course, Star Trek references there. He also says, we shall meekly go. Changes it to no, we shall cautiously go, which is, once again, the boldly go reference. And then he says at the end, the next step to be will be to go where no men have gone before. And he also mentions, should we encounter Trib, beg your pardon, Trouble, referencing the trouble with tribbles.
That's sweet. Someone had fun with that.
I'd be the perfect person to write this sequel.
You would be.
Get on it, Jagex.
You definitely would be.
Volunteer.
I just don't know what it would be about yet. I need to work on that. Something better than weather balloons, I think.
Well,
and bring in the gnomes. They got gliders.
Ooh.
You know what I really love? I love the gnome copters.
Like, yes.
What if it was a crossover into finishing the gnome quest?
Ooh.
Where the gnomes are contacted for their technology to help against the elder gods.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Those little Arpazandra gnomes think they can hide inside a mountain. A mountain is nothing to a balloon.
And then you could just have this piece of technology that's put on there, and it can be used in the said gnome quest, and then you could build it in this little bottle quest in between.
Augmented balloon.
I like it.
Hey.
Or maybe you could have augmented bombing balloons, since we have bombs in game now.
Hey, let's get more power creep.
Yeah, whoever said flying cannons were out of the realm of possibility, right?
Hey.
Perfect. Perfect quest in terms of those references. And I remember that. I remember that.
Good times.
Very good times.
Better times once we get a Jedi reference in here.
Yeah, and you know, Trekkie wants the Wookiee reference as well.
We should have a Wookiee. I mean, come on.
I mean, given Maud Warden's history... I'm surprised he hasn't pushed
for something
like
that, right?
Oh, we might get a Wookiee! Right?
Yes! We might get a Wookiee. We deserve one.
But
without a Wookiee.
I also think that he's fairly good at, well, letting Maud Osborne handle the episodic stuff and not, you know, pushing too much emphasis, right? So.
Yeah. Well, they got bigger fish to fry, but, you know, I think we need a Wookiee.
And from Sirion, with the upcoming player model rework, going back, what was the first appearance of your RuneScape character?
Lord, I cannot remember that back that far, really. I remember for a time I had, like, the standard clothes from the Thessalia. I had the jacket, and I think what I was trying to go for is a denim jacket and denim jeans, because that was the fashion back in the time. Remember denim?
Yeah, that was definitely in the 90s or something, wasn't it?
Oh boy, yep.
Or was that even in the early 2000s?
I don't know. I thought it was a Canadian suit, is what I understood. Is that not right?
No. I think those years just sort of tend to blend together.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I also remember at some point I started playing it in 2008, and I have a lot of strong nostalgia for the 2008 Halloween event. I remember for a time just trying to dress my character up as Maggie, the witch from that event.
Oh, that's neat.
Hey, as best as could be done with 2008 Thessalia clothing. Don't think I quite pulled it off, but hey, it was fun.
You know, we are
dress up.
We are in luck here. I do have. Actually, no, that would be bad. That's a December screenshot. The Sand Hat. And that's a combat one. I do have screenshots going back to 2006. And, you know, most of these I'm in my rune armor, honestly, here with this, because it's for combat. Here's one that's not. I used to wear a black shirt with white boots with a black beret.
The berets. That's the classic fashion state, isn't it?
Yeah, that is what my earliest one that I can find was. Oh, and we got screenshots on here running the Windows XP silver theme, too. That really goes way back.
Oh, that's sweet.
I think the earliest I can... I know I was here before it, but the earliest I can remember, like, the earliest outfit was I always tried to wear the original elven stuff, like, from the camp, you know, the head, right. The ears.
Before you got your ghillie suit.
Yeah, before the ghillie suit. And then I'd always put, like, a short red beard because that's who I was tan, you know, I was tan as half elven.
Right.
So I could have a beard. Right. Right.
Oh,
and I was out for years and years and years.
And Legendscape, of course.
And the Legendscape.
Yeah. And, you know, this is why I always say that, you know, going back, it'd just be so great to get that 2004 era Dragon Longsword again. So.
Yeah, that would
be what I'm hoping for. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely the black beret and the black shirt. That's
now the first thing I thought was like really cool. Like I was walking around like, haha, look at this, check me out. That was when I had my dragon ornamental. That was like,
uh-huh.
I thought that was big shit back then, you know, like, look at me.
Look at this guy.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful. All right. Well, that was a fun question. And, you know, I think Flashinscape's only going to get bigger with the player model rework because it's so, so important. We're going to wrap the show up now, but if you guys want to send your own questions in, email them to questions@rsbnb.com, or you can send us DM on Twitter @rsbnb, or just leave them at update.rsbnb.com/ask, and we're going to move on. We have some picks of the week from Questcaping and Tanis here. So, Questcaping, I have a feeling we're going to be enjoying your pick of the week.
Yeah. So, what I have to recommend is probably going to appeal to anyone who picked up RuneScape back in the miniclip days, because, of course, it was hosted on a miniclip along with tons and tons of other free Flash games back in the day. And, yeah, and, of course, we are in 2021 now. Flash support has officially ended, which is rather tragic. But there have been some excellent archivists working away, and they have compiled the Flashpoint Archive. So that is my pick of the week. I discovered this, I think, back in October, and then spent the next 3 days just headfirst in rediscovering all my favorite Flash games from back in the day. It's not just Flash games, too. It's Java games, there's Shockwave, there's any of the old technologies that they used to use. And wow, some of the games really have not quite held up to my modern standards. It's like, oh, this was a lot better when I was a kid. But some of them have. Some of them are really rather excellent. So just about any game you can probably think of from back in those days, just look it up on the archive, and you may well be able to find it in there. I have a couple recommendations of games I really enjoyed back in the day. For one, there's Spybotics, The Nightfall Incident. That was a game hosted on the LEGO website, which was actually really high quality. And it's a bit of a strategy game where you command various units around several levels.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and that it so really do you know, holds up well.
Does this install an actual version of Flash on your system, or how does it work? Because I know Flash itself was a big security thing, especially in the
but they've most got recent years. They've got it so that there's no security risk.
Yeah, and I did read that these games can't connect to the internet, so I mean they can't connect and call home, or anyone can't use them maliciously. So there's definitely safety issues. I was just wondering what they're doing with that, but.
I think there's a checkbox somewhere, so if you have Flash, it can actually use Flash, but otherwise they have their own way of running it. And also, yeah, that all saves local copies. There's actually two ways of installing the Flashpoint Archive. You can get Flashpoint Ultimate, I think, is the one where it just downloads everything, all several hundred gigabytes of it. And then Flashpoint Infinity is one where you just install the launcher and then can get game after game, whatever you want, on demand. So it's a much smaller file size. That's what I've got.
Wow. Mm-hmm. So many games. So many games. And, you know, this actually touches on a bigger issue out there than not many people think of, is that there's just so many dead websites on the internet that nobody has an archive of. And, you know, sure, you have archive.org and whatnot. But, you know, when it comes to things like Flash, that's not easy to archive. And you're reliant on people Flashpoint to make that happen. Yeah. So
I always really admire archival work like this, because this is internet history, and the internet is getting older and getting bigger every day. And we can't have everything, can't have every bit of content be just transitive and disappearing after a second. You've got to have some kind of way of building back up every bit of history that's been accumulated.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. Tanis, what do you got?
Well, kind of go along the same retro feel. I've got a retro game collection. So a lot of people out there know that I like my retro games, and I use various methods to play them. But today I'm bringing you one that is from Steam, and it is the Castlevania Anniversary Collection. So if you remember the old Castlevania games, Shane, these were staples and hallmarks of all of the early consoles. Incredibly fun and difficult platformer. Probably it might be the first game I ever beat all the way. Just a fun, incredible game from, you know, my childhood or whatever. It's $20, and you get like the original Castlevania, you get Castlevania 2, and you get Castlevania 3. Those were all on the original NES. They're all great games. Super Castlevania 4, even better game, obviously, at Super NES. And then you got Castlevania the Adventure, Castlevania 2, Belmont's Revenge, and Castlevania Bloodlines. I think those are Genesis, but I'm not entirely sure. So don't quote me. And then it also includes a Kid Dracula, which was never released in English before, and an ebook, which is the history of Castlevania. So
so it's kinda, not just one game, cool. You're getting an entire basket, which is good.
Yeah, you get a decent basket, and I've played all of these, like, they look and feel just like they always did.
And you play them with your keyboard, or do you use a controller?
I use a controller.
Okay, do you have an old retro controller too, or?
I do, but I can't use that on Steam.
Right, so. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful. Good pick of the week.
Thanks.
Well, you know, I don't have a pick this week, but I can give you guys some achievements, a good number of them. Starting off, we have Malchior with 99 Magic on January 20th. Rune Dragon also got 99 Slayer on the 20th. Acronia with 99 Farming. Nathan with 99 Fishing, these latter two on the 19th. As well as Silly Cat 98 with 99 Woodcutting and 99 Construction on the 19th of January.
Well, nice. Well, then we have Malchior again with 99 Archaeology on the 18th. We have Rune Dragon with 99 Farming on the 18th. We have Schnitz with 99 Archaeology on the 18th. And we have Dog Says FTW with 99 Herblore on the 17th, and Mining on the 17th, and Runecrafting. That was on the 16th. So nice job. And then we have Dom the Mexican with 99 Woodcutting on January 16th.
Yes, and another one from Dog Says FTW. That was a 99 Divination the day before on the 15th. And we also have Holiday Fan. That's Evil Fan's holiday name. 120 Slayer on January the 15th. We have Xanthem Gun with 99 crafting on the 15th. Dog says FDW again on the 14th, this time with 99 thieving. We have Esle with 99 archaeology on the 14th. Another 99 from Garden Chick on the 14th of January. And Jammy Jenny with 99 prayer on the 14th.
Nicely done. All right. Well, it's about time to close and, you know, Yak Tracks wrapping up. That's what I've been up to on RS. I've wanted to do more. I wanted to go PVMing last weekend. I wanted to go back to archaeology this week. I want to go back to Shattered Worlds, but I'm only 4 tasks away. So I really need to knock this Yak Track out and just complete it. At this point, you know, not stopping on it. So that's what I've been up to. You know, I've been getting around, you know, doing fishing, cooking, mining, smelting. I just think it's fun to kind of vary things up like that. So I've actually been enjoying it, even though it sounds like I'm complaining right now. I've even trained some agility at the Heffen agility course.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, I mean, it's not the agility pyramid or Brimhaven agility.
That's true.
What have you been up to, Tannis?
So, I mean, I'm still trying to get my legs under me at work, but in the few moments I have had to be able to play RuneScape, I'm still working on that 120 archaeology grind, but I think I'm going to try to carve out some time for some contracts. I got some reading to do, and I think that'll be the perfect opportunity to start working on some construction contracts.
Nice.
Lovely.
Nice. And questscaping.
Whoa. A lot of what I do in RuneScape lately is just sort of outside the game. Yeah, I've got to that sort of stage where I do a lot of talking about RuneScape, a lot of thinking about RuneScape, a lot of working on things to do with RuneScape, but not much playing. I kind of missed the combat week, unfortunately, and haven't got as much into the minigame weekend as I'd hoped to, but I did manage to get some nice events arranged for the weekend, so I'm looking forward to those. Mm-hmm. And also, I've been working on a bit of a project myself, so you might not know that I'm being pretty heavily involved in the creative community. So I got really into Dragonkin lore when Orthanc came out, because I hadn't been into them before that, and now it's just some explosion of creativity. So I'm working on a bit of a project, got lots of art involved, writing involved, and talking to a bunch of creative friends about that too, so we've all been working on something.
Nice, nice. And, you know, that Dragonkin stuff's pretty amazing, so that's always fun. We loved Orthanc. But, you know, that's pretty much it for this episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week to talk about the mini quest, or quest, depending on how you look at it and what it turns out to be in the end. But if you want to subscribe to the podcast, it's the best way to get it delivered automatically to you. Just head on over to update.rsbnb.com/subscribe. You can get it on any podcast listener out there, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, anything, even YouTube, youtube.com/rsbnb. And with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.